Going to sketch it out a little bit, and then in a couple weeks, Chris will sketch it out probably more accurately. So consider this an intro to whatever Chris has got up his sleeve. The Psalms are a collection of prayers and poems, hymns. Some were set to music, and as you read through the Psalms, they have specific instructions. And they were written, although lots are attributed to David, they were written by, I think, lots of different people over a period of time. And the Psalms really are all a collection of these captured emotions. There's Psalms that lament. There's Psalms of complaint. There's hymns. There's these rich moments of praising God, declaring things about who God is, about community, telling stories from life and the events of the temple, and on and on. But they're really this pouring out of a heart, of a writer's heart, of a community's heart to God, telling what was happening both in the life of an individual and of the community. And so tonight I am going to begin this series, and I have chosen Psalm 27. And I think as we read through it in a moment, you'll see that one of the themes in Psalm 27 is this whole idea of what to do about fear, about being afraid. And I don't know what you are afraid of or how you experience anxiety or the things that you're anxious about. But I one of the traditions that Lori and I have is on Monday morning, we often will go and get a coffee or a bowl of oatmeal, and we come back in and we watch television. I kind of secretly like CSI Miami. So I just get a kick out of like all the glasses and the looking in the camera and the tilted head, like my neck is busted. But so we watch that. Or maybe I do and she sleeps or whatever, but it kind of occupies a couple hours of our Monday mornings together. And one thing that I'm never going to live this down, I know it. I'm glad I'll be gone for 3 months. You guys will forget about it. So, one of the things that I noticed, and maybe it's intentional because of who they perceive their market is, but the advertisements between or during these series are often, I find, ads that are trying to create some kind of anxiety. There are stories about how so-and-so's house got broken into, and if you don't have the right alarm, then clearly your life is on the edge, or you've had some kind of surgical implant that clearly is going wrong, and if you just phone this number, they'll get you money. And so it's all this creating of these tensions. And I've been thinking about that and trying to think about some of the things that make me anxious. And one of the things, and I think this is going to end up being a bad transition because I'm not truly afraid of this, but this last week, Annalie got her driver's license. And so so that's created for Lori and I a little bit of anxiety, not because Annalie's a bad driver, she's a good driver, but because it's just weird to, like the very first thing she did when she got her license was she took our other two kids on a Slurpee run. So all three of our kids were in this car and off the driveway, they drive away, and Lori's looking at them thinking, well, those are all three of my babies, and what if they never come back? And they came back, and yes, and they're here, so it's proof. But it does create these things, like, you know, can I take the car up to camp by myself? I'm like, maybe. Ask me next year. But the thing is that there's these things that kind of come into our lives that create anxiety or kind of fear. I was talking to a psychiatrist, and he made an interesting distinction for me about fear and anxiety. And he was saying how that he would classify fear as a healthy emotion, that we as people are built to have fear, that it's an emotion that people feel when danger is actually present, so that there's some kind of present danger. But anxiety, he said, on the other hand, is a fear connected with worrying about a danger that could possibly happen. So it's not actually even real. It's something that you are creating. Maybe it's a trigger or these kinds of things. And so I've been trying to figure out how this all fits together. And so then I, as I was reading through the Psalms, I came across Psalm 27, and I thought it was a really interesting, I think, unfolding of at least it was helpful for me. And so I'm hoping that there'll be something there that also is helpful for you. Fear, as defined in the dictionary, is dread or fright, alarm, or panic. To be afraid is to be filled with fear or apprehension. And then on the other side, there's this idea of maybe peace, a state of quietness or a state of security, freedom from disquieting or oppressive thoughts or emotions. And so that's the tension that I think these Psalms often bring out. And I think fear, as I mentioned, can be healthy, that we do as people need fear. Fear is a way of protecting us. But then fear also can be immobilizing. I think I've talked about this a little bit before, but one of my fears is dogs. And it doesn't really even matter the size of dog. It goes back to when I was a kid, a paper boy, and there was a German Shepherd that used to break through the screen door and come out and bite me. I think I told you about that. And my dad would be like, "Don't be such a sissy, go back out there." And then I'd get bitten again. I'd be like, "I'm afraid of dogs." And when my sister-in-law and her family lived here, we had a couple encounters with dogs. And you know, with fear, there's this whole kind of this fight or flight kind of thing. And so recently in our neighborhood, there was this dog running around that kind of was freaking out the kids and Lori a little bit. And so then that scales it up for me. And so that kind of created these retelling of these stories again from when Andrea, our sister-in-law, lived here. And they lived beside somebody who had a big dog. And one time we went there, and so the story that Lori remembers is we stepped out of the van, and this big dog came running out, and I ran around the other side of the van to leave her to fend for herself. That's the one challenge. I prefer to tell the story of the time we went there, and this big dog jumped into our van when we had small kids strapped in the car seat, and I went after the dog, hauled him out, and was like Superman. So that's the story I like to tell. But that's that whole kind of flight or fight. And I often flee dogs more than I fight with dogs. But fear is there to help also preserve. But then there's these moments in which, at some point, it becomes immobilizing. And so with that as kind of the backdrop, let's read Psalm 27 together. And if you'd like to follow along in the Bibles you'll find there in the pews, it's on page 808. It says this. This is a psalm of David. "The Lord is my light and my salvation, so why should I be afraid? The Lord is my fortress, protecting me from danger, so why should I tremble? When evil people come to devour me, when my enemies and foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though a mighty army surrounds me, my heart will not be afraid. Even if I am attacked, I will remain confident. One thing I ask of the Lord, the thing I seek most, is to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, delighting in the Lord's perfections and meditating in his temple. For he will conceal me there when troubles come. He will hide me in his sanctuary. He will place me out of reach on a high rock. Then I will hold my head high above my enemies who surround me. At his sanctuary I will offer sacrifices with shouts of joy, singing and praising the Lord with music. Hear me as I pray, O Lord. Be merciful and answer me. My heart has heard you say, 'Come and talk with me.' And my heart responds, 'Lord, I am coming.' Do not turn your back on me. Do not reject your servant in anger. You have always been my helper. Don't leave me now. Don't abandon me, O God of my salvation. Even if my father and mother abandon me, the Lord will hold me close. Teach me how to live, O Lord. Lead me along the right path, for my enemies are waiting for me. Do not let me fall into their hands, for they accuse me of things I've never done. With every breath, they threaten me with violence. Yet I am confident I will see the Lord's goodness while I am here in the land of the living. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord. And I think that this psalm is written in a moment where it seems to me, at least as I read it, that there doesn't seem to be a gigantic crisis in David's life, that he's reflecting on these moments in which he's had being surrounded by enemies, or he's had these events come into his life. And through this kind of experiences, he's able to reflect back and then write out of this place that the Lord is my light and my salvation, that the Lord will save and deliver. So why should I be afraid? But I think that, at least for me, there are things that I do feel afraid of, that there are these storms that come. They seem to overwhelm in the night. Another one of the things that I used to always be afraid of, and I think I still kind of sit up when I hear the sputtering, is when our kids were little, I was always so nervous about them choking. I don't know if you can relate to that, but any kind of sign that they might be choking, I was like, oh, let's get something done. The sounds of a house or how our minds invent things, it kind of seems to kind of begin to play on themselves. And often it's nice when Lori's around because I send her out, I guess. No, but she's there as a support. And last night, for instance, we were here kind of doing some cleaning up. It was a little bit later. And we were moving something out into the hallway, and I could hear this racket in my office, and the door was open, and I could hear this guitar jangling around, and I was thinking, oh, great, somebody's in there stealing, not even my guitar, it's my friend's guitar, so I actually have to probably go in there and confront this person. And Lori said my eyes were all big, and I was super nervous, and I kind of looked at her like, well, maybe you'll come with me, maybe you'll come with me. In the end, it was Jordan, so it was fine. He had my guitar, he was just returning it. But there was this moment in which I felt this tension. And so we have these eternal storms, these worries, these doubts, things even that we make up. But then there are genuine storms that blow into our lives, storms that bring real pain, real hardship, real obstacles, real chaos. And I would argue that actually chaos is all around. That if you just look around and you turn on the TV, open a newspaper, browse the internet, chaos seems to be a companion to storms. Kind of like chaos is the right-hand man of creating fear. And often these storms, these things, they blow in, they come like giants, threatening our presence, and they steal from us. They seem to steal our security, our livelihood, our confidence, our family, our friends, our support, our hope, our future. We feel like they're even taking our very lives. And so here they come and they threaten to immobilize us. And not only that, they raise questions. And some questions that they raise, for me at least, it just seems to find it hard to find an answer that makes sense in any kind of shape or form. When tragedy comes, when loss happens, it just seems like a deep, dark, swirling sea that threatens to pull me under for a final time. And so I struggle with both how I feel afraid and how I am trying to find God in the middle of it, and also these unanswered questions. And I go to a psalm like this, and I read some of these things, and it says, the Lord is my fortress, protecting me from danger, so why should I tremble? And I think I should tremble because this thing is real, it's big. And so there's these tensions in which we engage these words as a way to kind of begin to process. The sea has always been a classic symbol of the force that threatens humanity. In the ancient, for the ancient kind of Near East, it was often a symbol of death, the cosmic abyss, a place where these monsters hid, ancient monsters. There was security or anxiety, the dwelling place of chaos. In mythology, there was these same kind of ideas. One of my favorite bands is The Police or Sting, and there's a song in which they sing about the Scylla and Charybdis. I don't know if you remember that, but it's these two mythical creatures. Scylla was a monster with a serpent and dog's head, And she lived along this dangerous crag in the Straits of Messina, where in her misery she would seize and destroy all passing ships. And then right across the straits from Scylla was a whirlpool thought to be the home of the monster Charybdis. And so there's this idea in this is that people would try to navigate between these two things, on this sea that held death, but between these two monsters. And often that's, I think, a kind of a feeling of what it means and how it is to navigate the storms and the fear, that you're doing your best not to get sucked in or to get pulled back or to get pulled under. This, I think, reminded me, as I was thinking, of a very familiar story in Mark, a story of Jesus in a boat with his disciples. If you remember it, it's in Mark chapter 4. But the story unfolds as Jesus talking to disciples, and they're going to cross to the other side of the lake. And so Jesus gets in the boat, and as the story goes, this storm kind of comes up. But Jesus is in the boat just sleeping away, kind of like chaos all around, and Jesus is asleep. It almost seems kind of like cartoonish in a way, right? Like the boat's kind of flailing around, and the disciples are flailing around, and here's Jesus on a little pillow with these Z's coming out of, you know, kind of snoring away. And the disciples are so nervous that eventually they wake up Jesus and they say, kind of, are you going to do something? Because we're all going to sink to the bottom. And then Jesus, as he wakes up and he hears the disciples' concern, he rebukes the wind and the waves, and he says to be still, and there's this moment in which the storm calms down. And then he asks them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? And I think it's interesting to me, because I don't know that answer, I can read that answer as a rebuke, but it doesn't seem to, in this story, to really fit as a rebuke. But Jesus rebukes the wind and the storm, but with the disciples, he kind of is this, why are you afraid? Do you not have faith? Like, I'm right here with you. I'm present with you. And I think that in this story and in these pictures, that the hope that this faith promises, that Jesus is talking about, this faith that he suggests, is not this, if you have faith, nothing will ever happen to you that's bad. No storms will blow into your life. But rather that if you have faith, if you understand that I am present with you, that the boat may shatter in a million pieces, and you maybe will drop into the sea, but it will be okay, because there's no place that we can go. There's nothing that can happen that is beyond God's reach. That Jesus, in the end, is telling them, I'm present with you. The psalmist also understood this. They wrote these same kind of words. In Psalm 139, the psalmist writes, you hem me in, speaking of God, you hem me in behind and before me. You have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I go down to the place of the dead, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there your hand will guide me. Your strength will support me. And that's a pretty impressive list of places that one might find themselves and never be absent from God. To the depths, to the heights, no place that God is not present with us. Apostle Paul writes similar words. Can anything ever separate us from Christ's love? Does it mean that he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity, or are persecuted or hungry or cold or in danger, threatened with death? He says, no, for I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from his love. Death can't and life can't. The angels can't and the demons can't. Our fears for today, our worries about tomorrow, and even the powers of hell can't keep God's love away. Whether we are high above the sky or in the deepest ocean, nothing in all creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God. And as we begin this journey of looking at the Psalms, there's another way to kind of begin to understand how the Psalms can work in terms of helping us understand things. And in terms of, for me, understanding what to do with my fear and how to come to God and how to have these conversations. Walter Brueggemann, in his kind of commentary about the Psalms, talks about that there's another way to look at Psalms, and that is to think of them in terms of orientation, disorientation, and then reorientation. And so the way he talks about this is that orientation is a season in life when one enjoys a sense of well-being and stability. So it's kind of this moment in which things seem well, things are good, this is kind of the right thing, orientation. And disorientation, then, is a season in life and when things start to come apart. Maybe when storms blow in, there's conflict, there's affliction, there's some kind of thing, we begin to become disorientated. And then this reorientation is a moment in which God breaks through the darkness with his divine light. So there's this coming in, there's this recognition that God is present, is with us. And then Brueggemann goes on to suggest that we, as people, are always in transition between these states, either going from a state of settled orientation into a season of disorientation, or moving from disorientation into new orientation by God's gracious intervention. And so as I began to understand this, as we consider the Psalms, as we consider even this Psalm 27, that this is an opportunity to begin to think and to observe the interplay and movement of the struggle and struggle it is of understanding how God meets us in these places, how God is present with us in all of these states, in orientation, in disorientation, and in reorientation. And the one line that I really, that really jumped out, really kind of hit me over and over as I read Psalm 27 is verse 8. And the psalmist is saying, "Hear me as I pray, O Lord, be merciful and answer." And then it says, "My heart has heard you say, come and talk with me." I love that idea of this Savior, this God who is always inviting us, always searching, always sending out the invitation, come. I want to be present with you. I'm here. Come and talk with me. And my heart responds, Lord, I'm coming. So this invitation to come and lay it out. What is it all about? What's going on? Come, let us reason. Let's have this conversation. What's going on? Lord, I am coming. I want to read just one more quote from Walter Brueggemann. And he says this, "Much Christian piety and spirituality is romantic and unreal in its positiveness. As children of enlightenment, we have censored and selected around the voice of darkness and disorientation, seeking to go from strength to strength, from victory to victory. But such a way not only ignores the Psalms, it is a lie in terms of our experience." It not only ignores what's happening in the Psalms, as we read these people talking about life events and pouring their hearts out as things go bad or go well. It says, not only ignores the Psalms, it is a lie in terms of our experience. Then he says, "Brevard Childs is no doubt right in seeing the Psalms as an act of hope. But the hope is rooted precisely in the midst of loss and darkness, where God is surprisingly present. The Jewish reality of exile, the Christian confession of crucifixion and cross, the honest recognition that there is an untamed darkness in our life that must be embraced, all of that is fundamental to the gift of new life." And again, if you want to kind of read that book, it's Spirituality of Psalms. But I think that this underlying thing that has been an encouragement to me as I kind of process and as I think about fear is that there's this promise that Christ is present, that God is present, that there's someone who will walk with us through all things. And I as I was reflecting on that, I felt this kind of joy in knowing that there's this presence. But then in that same moment, I also recognized that there's this flip that happens too, that in the same way that we have this benefit of understanding that God is present for us, and that the flip is that we are supposed to then be present for others, that we are supposed to also model what we receive. This is Christ's call, this following, this listening, this responding, being present for others, becoming what you receive. There's this new television show that kind of is cracking me up. It's called Saved. Anne Hesh is in it, and it kind of ping-pongs between, you know, I think profane and then I think profound. It kind of goes back and forth. But one of the episodes was all about. So the underlying story is that she's a woman who kind of was off the rails, and through this weird event of choking, starts to hear the voice of God. And as she hears this voice of God, she's learning what it means to listen and to respond. And one of the latest shows was all about her discovering the Bible. And she's reading the Good Samaritan and realizes that God is calling her to be a Good Samaritan in her neighborhood. That there's this particular woman that nobody can stand, and they're trying to petition her to leave. And she recognizes that there's this call to love and to care and to move out and to be present for this woman. And that really challenged me in thinking of how often I have let fear prevent me from being present for others. Either a fear of what it might cost me at some level, or a fear of being too shy, or a fear maybe even, I don't know how the word would be, embarrassed to kind of be seen with a particular person, or to be willing to state out loud how I feel about a particular group of people. And so I'm learning about what it means to understand God's presence for me, and being able to work through the troubles and the storms and the anxiety that I have. But then I'm also understanding that I am then to kind of work at being that for others. I love the communion table for that reason. It's this thing that centers our community gathering. It reminds us of who Jesus is, of what he was willing to do for us, of this idea of recognizing that he is present, that he's here, and that he wants to offer for us things, that he wants to pour things into our life, hope and health and restoration, freedom from bondage. But then as we come to the table, there's this moment, we break off the bread, we dip in the juice, and it's this understanding that what Christ has done for us. But then as we move away from the table, we are also reminded that we are then to live it out in a tangible way, that we are to become the hands and feet of Christ. Behold what you are, become what you receive. And so our tradition here is that when you feel ready, you come, there's hand sanitizer at the front and the back, you just tear off a piece of bread, dip it in the juice. There's a gluten-free option if that's an issue for you. There'll be music that is playing, and the music is really designed to help you formulate your own prayers, that it's our opportunity to respond back to God, to pour out our hearts, to have these conversations with God. And maybe this, you just need to kind of move out and go for a walk. Maybe you just need to kind of think and to be away. That's okay, that we don't want you to feel trapped. We want you to feel that you can participate in as much as authentic, so not to force you to do anything. But it's this idea of being able to have some time in the business of our living to kind of have this block of quietness of being able to respond back to God. And so I'd like to, as we move into this time of response, read part of the prayer of St. Patrick and allow these words to begin to help us understand both the God who is always present for us, but then to flip that and understand what it means to pay attention to those we come in contact with, to be present for them. So St. Patrick wrote this: I arise today through the power of God, God's might to comfort me, God's wisdom to guide me, God's eye to look before me, God's ear to hear me, God's word to speak for me, God's hand to lead me, God's way to lie down before me, God's shield to protect me, God's heavenly host to save me, from the snares of the devil, from temptation to sin, from all who wish me ill, from near and afar, alone and with others. May Christ shield me today against poison and fire, against drowning and wounding, so that I may fulfill my mission and bear fruit in abundance. Christ behind me and before me, Christ behind and above me, Christ with me and in me, Christ around and about me, Christ on my right and on my left, when I lie down at night, God, Christ when I rise in the morning, Christ in the heart of every person who thinks of me, Christ in the mouth of everyone that speaks of me, Christ in every eye that sees me, Christ in every ear that hears me. Let's pray.